Huaca del Sol, the Moche capital, contains the largest adobe structures in the Andes, still hauntingly evocative despite centuries of systematic looting. Unwilling to laboriously dig their way through the palace's tombs, the Spaniards diverted the Moche River through it, washing out the riches in orthodox Augean stable style. Contemporary thieves have contented themselves with picks and shovels. After about 300 AD, Moche artists confined themselves to perhaps half a dozen subjects, painting stories of supernatural figures on pottery and murals with ever more naturalistic technique. Actors reenacted the same stories in grand pageants and ritual celebrations. Individual combat is a common theme. Losers were formally stripped of their garments and forced to parade naked. Another oft-repeated tale involves the death and burial of a regal figure. Many of the people in the paintings are sharply individuated. Great effort has gone into studying the Moche, but as Mosley says, their identities and motives often remain elusive. The Moche polity broke up around 800 AD, taking with it our chance to understand. One of the few moments when I imagined I could encompass something of the inner lives of these long-ago people occurred in Chavín de Huántar, a city of several thousand people that existed between about 800 BC and 200 AD. Its most important feature, a ceremonial temple shaped in a U with a central sunken plaza, was a masterpiece of architectural intimidation. Using a network of concealed vents and channels, priests piped loud roaring sounds at those who entered the temple. Visitors walked up three flights of stairs, growls echoing around them, and into a long, windowless passageway. At the end of the corridor, in a cross-shaped room that flickered with torchlight, was a 15-foot-high stone figure with a cat-like face, taloned fingers, fierce tusks, and Medusa hair. Nobody today is sure of the god's identity. Immediately above it, hidden from visitors' eyes, sat a priestly functionary who provided the god's voice. After the long torchlit approach, walking straight into the gaze of the snarling deity, mysterious bellows reverberating off the stone, the oracular declamation from above must have been spine-chilling. Most of the complex is open to visitors today. Many of the sculptures have been put into museums. Others, presumably, have been looted. Yet walking into the temple still felt to me like entering a mountain of solid rock. Over and over again, Andean stories tell of spirits embodied in stones and giants transformed into natural features. The landscape has an intricate, numinous geography. It is charged with meaning that must be respected and heeded. The earth, in this view, is not something to be left alone. The Huaca that litter Peruvian anthropological sites are often partly sculpted, as if they had needed some human attention to manifest their sacred qualities. Thus, the human-made tunnels into the temple were part of what made it embody the power of a mountain. As I walked down the dimly lighted corridor toward where the torchlit deity had stood, my fingers ran along the walls created by Chavín craftworkers. They were fit beautifully into place and as cold and hard as the mountains they came from. But they did not gain their power without my hand to close the circuit. The natural world is incomplete without the human touch.